I mean, for me, from my perspective, this was always about the collector and not so much about the watches. And I think that the collections that you see throughout all these things, sort of speak to that. There are some multi-million dollar collections, and then there are some, on the other end of the spectrum. But it's about the ethos of collecting, it's about the person, it's about the stories behind them that really make this thing work.
Hey everybody, I'm your host Stephen Pulverant, and this is Hodinkee Radio. We've got a really fun one for you this week. We're kicking off our first ever Watch Madness Talking Watches tournament. There are 53 episodes of Talking Watches, our flagship video series, and in some way, our flagship editorial product. And they've been recorded over the last 7 or 8 years, and we thought it would be fun to assemble them all together, put them into a March Madness-style bracket, and let you, the readers and listeners, vote on your favorites. So what we're going to do is over the next couple of weeks, you'll have the opportunity every day to visit Hodinkee and to cast your vote on who you think should win in head-to-head episode matchups. Some of the matchups include Gary Steingart versus Andre Iguodala, Tony Fadell versus John Mayer's second episode, and Mario Andretti against Jack Nicklaus. This is pretty wild stuff. Before that, though, we wanted to get a group of our editors together to give you a little preview. So I got Ben and Will and James and Cara together, and we decided to talk about the history of Talking Watches, what the show means to each of us, and then get really deep into each matchup, giving you a play-by-play, previews of the collections, and who we think might come out victorious. This is going to be a ton of fun, and we're going to come back to you at the end of each round, before the next round, and give you another preview. So we'll be with you the whole way through this. So without further ado, let's get into it. Test one.
Check
one,
check
two,
check
three.
Levels.
Your right. Levels good, James?
Yeah, I think they look good. Yeah.
They're good? Yeah, they're solid?
Yeah.
All right. Podcast jokes. Hey team, how's it going?
Alive.
Hey, alive? Okay. Everybody's doing all right?
Yeah. Isolation is cool.
that's one take, Cara.
Basically the same day every day.
Every day. Time is a flat circle, my friends.
Yeah, I've been looking forward to this call all week.
So we got CB here.
Hi.
We got Mr. James Stacy.
Hey everyone.
I got Mr. Will Holloway. Is this your Hodinkee Radio debut?
It is. Terribly uncomfortable, but here I am, working remotely from the rolling hills of Northwest Connecticut.
Perfect. And then we got our fearless leader, Mr. Ben Clymer.
Sir, how you doing?
Good. And we got our producer, Grace, here, too. I think he may pop in and say something a little later, but yeah, he's in the background for now. So we're here to do something fun, to launch a new project. We've been thinking a lot about what we can do, remotely, what we can do to kind of keep people entertained and kind of build on this level watch collecting while everybody's looking for some distractions. Plus, I know a handful of us are kind of dying here without sports the last couple weeks.
I'm fine. So I don't know what you guys are talking about.
You're fine?
It's been really hard. It's been really hard.
James, nobody's moved any chains.
Nobody's moving any chains. The game is no longer about yardage. I'm lost. I don't know what to say.
Well, we got a solution for you, man. This game is all about yardage. We are launching Watch Madness, the 2020 Talking Watches Tournament. Basically, what we've done here is we've put all 53 episodes of Talking Watches into a March Madness-style bracket. Episodes will go head-to-head with one another, and then one will move on, one will get cut, and then we'll keep the voting going over the next couple weeks. And eventually, we'll emerge with a Talking Watches champion. If you're trying to do the math in your head, yes, 53 does not pair off into even brackets. So the first 11 episodes of Talking Watches all get buys, so they move past the first round. And then after that, it'll be a clean head-to-head matchup all the way down to a Final Four and then eventually a champion. So does that make sense to everybody?
Very well explained, Stephen.
All right, perfect. I think I have a future on ESPN maybe. But all right, so before we get into the brackets, what we're going to do here today mostly is preview these. We're going to go through all the episodes, talk about the matchups, and kind of look at what the first round holds. But Ben and Will, I wanted to get some of your general thoughts about Talking Watches. I mean, this premiered, or I guess we kicked this off back in, 2013 with Mr. John Mayer? And this was really your collective brainchild, right?
It was. And I think what people may not realize is that this all started, sort of on a whim and, on a shoestring. John had sort of come into the fold, on the website, had written a few articles, for us. And at some point we, got together and said, hey, let's do a video. And this was not called Talking Watches at that point. This did not have a name. I don't think anybody expected us to be sitting here 7-8 years later talking about 53 episodes. I think after episode 3 with John Goldberger, we all kind of looked at each other and said, okay, what do we do now? And at that point, I think people started coming out of the woodwork. This started to sort of gain a little traction and, become a thing. And it's kind of grown from there over the years. But kicking off with John, obviously, was a big coup for us, as a small sort of agile media company at that point. And his sort of larger-than-life personality brought a lot of weight to this and kicked it off, and it became a thing.
Yeah, and I wonder, Ben, for you, what does this mean to you as kind of a bigger part of Hodinkee? I mean, this is in some ways like our flagship video series, one of our flagship products.
I would say so. I mean, I think it's, it means a lot to me, kind of personally and professionally. I think to us as a company, I mean, I think you nailed it. I'd say it's more than our flagship video product. I think it's our flagship editorial product. I think it's it is the number one requested, thing that we do on the website. That and like limited editions, like those two things are what people want from us all the time. Obviously, both of those things take a lot of time and a lot of work on the back end to make happen. But yeah, I mean, as Will said, like there was no, just like Hodinkee in general, like there was no premeditation behind this. Like it just kind of happened one day. I think I shared this on my podcast episode, but basically like John was in town doing something like playing. He still lived in New York at the time, but wasn't really living here that much. He was in town to do like Letterman or Leno back then or something like that. And he's like, hey, like I've got 2 hours before I have to get on set. Like I've got 7 watches. Like, should we do this thing? And we're like, okay. And I was somewhere. I was, I think in Nantucket on a trip or something and flew in that morning. And I think Will went down the street to this place called Little Prince, which is just like a random cafe, a pretty good cafe, just down the street from our office, our WeWork space, and asked if we can do it. And I think, as I said before, like, I don't think they really believed him that like John Mayer was going to show up. And they were like, yeah, sure. Like, whatever, dude. And then John Mayer showed up and then we did it. And then like a week later, like before we even published that episode, JJ Redick, who also was kind of around at the time and still is, was like, yeah, I'll do it too. And so we had John and JJ who, looking back, those are two huge names to have. We'd be thrilled to get those guys now, so to launch with those two guys was pretty awesome for sure.
Yeah, I wonder for Carr and James, you guys were not at Hodinkee when those first couple episodes launched. Do you remember kind of your first memories of Talking Watches?
I remember seeing the first one and thinking like, oh wow, they're into something at a whole different level. John's just so magnetic, and there was a rapport going on. It's the kind of thing that just kind of worked out the first time, and watching it was a thrill. I remember thinking like, oh, this is a guitar guy. My brother's a huge John Mayer fan. I probably knew like all the hits, and then to see him like kind of pour over something else that he loves is kind of fun to see someone that, because to be somebody like a John Mayer, you have to really love guitars and playing music, and to see that same sort of like ability to latch onto something pass to something else like watches is really special. And I think that's some of the fun that's in this, is you meet these people who are fanatics for something, and then they're also fanatics for watches. It's this fun kind of crossfade.
from a production standpoint, I just remember trying to figure out what the hell I was doing.
A lot of shots of water glasses.
A lot of water glasses.
That's the third guest of that first episode is the water glass.
Always be B-rolling.
Well, you know, it was a long conversation. it went on and on. So we were, you know, what you see in that first episode is really the highlights of, you know, that of that conversation. But I just remember this was an open restaurant at the time. So, you know, audio was a challenge, running four cameras, trying to keep everything in focus, making sure batteries were running, SD cards were all there. I mean, there was a little bit of pressure, I will admit. But somehow it worked out.
It's just amazing that, like, they didn't shut the restaurant down. You know, we were eating lunch right behind us.
Yeah.
Wait, there were people eating there while you guys were filming it?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
There were people pointing. Oh, being
I
like,
thought it was
that
just
John
you
Mayer?
Guys.
No. Oh, no. Yeah. I think they thought I said Sean Mayer or something. They just had no idea.
You guys did it before Jerry and Comedians in Cars. I always wonder how there's people in those restaurants they go to.
Yeah. Right.
I had no idea. You could have fooled me.
Also, at that point, I should say that I didn't have enough tripods for the four cameras, so I couldn't afford a tripod. So ended up doing a handheld camera, which I thought would give me a little bit more ability to move around and get some different, you know, types of shots. And somehow that lasted as a sort of element of these shoots for a long time, which kind of started for no reason whatsoever.
Would you guys say that, like, something that I think is interesting about talking watches is that it really does, it is a literal picture of the human element of watches, which I think was kind of not really talked about as much before, unless you were, like, looking in auction catalogs, seeing provenance, or, like, hearing stories from, like, other people. Would you say that, like, talking watches was really kind of kicked that off in the industry, or was, like, were there other people doing something similar? It just was kind of different, but, I mean, what do you guys think about that?
Yeah, I mean, at least in video format, for sure. I mean, like, you know, the early videos that I, like, shot over my bed, which, like, Will hates, you know, I had, like, people think I had, like, a fucking head cam on. I did not. It was on a tripod. I just had my arms wrapped around it. You know, like, nobody was doing video at all back then. And then this was certainly, like, the first semi-professional video in the watch space. And more so than that, like, you know, as you said, Carr, it's like, you know, it's the idea of, like, a human interacting with this product as opposed to just the product itself and focusing on collectors. But I mean, I think even more than that, like, focusing on, like, you know, young collectors and people that, like, you actually kind of, like, want to spend time with, as opposed to, like, that rich old guy you, like, kind of know, or, like, your dad's friend that's, like, a doctor, like, that, like, you really don't care about at all. Like, you're just not into that vibe, you know? And so, yeah, I think, you know, if I may say, I think, you know, we, you know, in some ways we said, like, hey, like, let's put the focus on the collector as much as the collection.
Yeah, I think that's a great point, Kara. I mean, for me, from my perspective, this was always about the collector and not so much about the watches. And I think that the collections that you see throughout all these things, you know, sort of speak to that. You know, there are some multi-million dollar collections, and then there are some, you know, on the other end of the spectrum. But it's about the ethos of collecting. It's about the person. It's about the stories behind them that really make this thing work, you know, from my perspective.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, we've said this before, but, like, I think so many people think before they find us or somebody like us, like, they kind of think that they're like an island, you know? And then it's like you're kind of embarrassed and you're kind of bashful about, like, your love for these things. And then, I mean, that first video with Mayer was amazing because, like, okay, like, here's, like, a successful, cool, talented guy, and he's into the same stuff in the same way that I am. You know, obviously he has a much different budget than most of us, but, like, he has the exact same amount of passion and fire for these, like, really kind of silly things. And, like, it kind of says, like, wait a minute, like, it's actually okay to be into this stuff.
Yeah, like the crunch of the winding stem.
Yeah, you know, this essentially for a lot of people is sort of online therapy for watch addicts. You know, this is a place to go and feel like, oh, you know what? You know, to Ben's point, I'm not alone. There are people just like me out there who are really, really into this stuff. Like James.
Yeah, they're just like me.
All right, let's dig into the brackets now. I think the five of us could probably sit here and just, like, reminisce about talking watches, but let's do it through the episodes. So we've got this broken down into roughly four divisions. It's not roughly.
4 to 5.
It's not roughly 4.
Somewhere between 4 and 4.
Specificity is the soul of narrative.
Correct, yeah. So we've got this broken down into 4 divisions, and let's start with the division on the top left of the bracket, which is the one Will's going to cover for us. And we're going to start with our very first episode with John Mayer.
Sure. Thanks, Stephen. I will call this the Mayer Quadrant as a working title, just to keep it simple. By virtue of being early adopters to our Talking Watches series, John, Eric Koo, and Fabrizio Sotti received first-round buys. Well-deserved, well-deserved. People that trusted us to tell their stories online to the world, so they get first-round buys. Which leaves us with 5 matchups in the Mayer quadrant. The first one being Aziz Ansari versus Wei Ko. interesting matchup. Emmy Award-winning writer, actor, director, producer, I guess all-around entertainment renaissance man. Versus a veteran of the watch world, fashion space, and renowned raconteur, I would say. Is that accurate?
Yeah, that's fair.
Aziz brought a small but solid collection to the table for his episode, 3 pieces. One that stood out to me was that Onyx Dial Day Date. Really a great looking piece. And then there was the pre-Daytona, which he talked about at length, having jumped in a pool with it during the filming of an episode in the second season of Master of None, for which he won an Emmy. I will say, side note, Master of None season 2 was fantastic. Was some of the best television that I've seen in a long, or I had seen in a long time. So bonus points for that. And then for Wei, known as the founder of Revolution and the Rake, sort of an all-around man about town, he brought 10 watches to the table, including some very cool independents. There was, I think, an Erwerk, Richard Mille, de Bethune, so kind of a different and unique collection, you know, for this series. Standout watch here for me was that 70s Royal Oak in yellow gold. It's such a kind of classic look in that 70s vibe. These were both shot in the office at the old Hodinkee HQ, so bonus points to both for not having us lug the equipment anywhere.
That's kind of the most important thing for Lala, right?
Spoken like a true video producer.
So save my back there. So pretty solid matchup. Different collectors, different ways of thinking about collecting.
Different ways of thinking.
Different ways of thinking.
So
pretty solid matchup in round 1, I would say. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, good matchup.
Yeah. All right, Will, who's up next in your quadrant?
My second matchup is baseballer Jose Bautista and actor, producer, and the guy from Lost, Daniel Dae Kim.
Yeah, also COVID-19 survivor.
Cheers to that. Cheers to that. Bautista, probably the greatest bat flipper of all time for baseball fans, renowned for that. This was a shoot down in Tampa, Florida. I remember it being incredibly hot.
Oh my God, so hot.
How hot was it, Ben?
It was so fucking hot.
This episode is really all about how hot the shoot days were and far Will had to lug suitcases of tripods.
Yeah,
this whole thing is basically Will and I complaining about things.
Yeah, exactly. What's new? Yeah. Jose, I think, brought about 8 watches for this shoot. And the thing that really struck me was, you know, him being an example of somebody who had found professional success and was able to revisit a sort of passion from childhood. He had been a watch enthusiast from a young age. So this really kind of spoke to that. The Panerai Radiomir 3-day really kind of spoke to me. Super simple, super clean. Bonus points for being easy to shoot. So that's something that always wins with me. DDK, all around, true gentleman, as Ben said, COVID-19 survivor.
Best jawline in the biz.
And I was going to say that damn jawline. So if we're voting on jawline alone, we can all just go home now and give the crown to Daniel Day.
He's also 50 years old and he's got a jawline like that.
No way.
That's
I'm a birther.
Crazy.
I'm a birther here. I
want to see. He's at least 50. We'll say that.
Yeah. DDK brought, I believe, 9 watches. And the thing that really struck me here was the nice variety of pieces, from a Seiko 5, which was the same model that his father had worn when Daniel was a kid, all the way up to Nautilus, and then a bunch of Speedmasters in between. So really different types of collections, but I think they really speak to the types of people who we, you know, that we showcase in this series. Thoughts on that?
Does Bautista get bonus points for the second base fight the season after?
I think he got his bell rung pretty solid, so no, he gets negative.
No, okay,
yeah,
all right,
yeah. Bonus points also to DDK. You know, throughout this, it's fair to say that people who are on camera a lot, actors and those types, just know how to play to the camera and are really good storytellers. So they make the lives of us video people much simpler. So, you know, points awarded there.
Gray, who, tell me about that mic check in LA.
That mic check? You know what I'm talking about.
Even on Zoom, I could tell he knows what you're talking about.
story time.
You were like, give me a mic check, and somebody gave you a mic check, and you were like, fuck, that's an amazing mic check. Oh, and I thought you were kidding, but you weren't.
Right, right. So to Will's point, when we have entertainers, actors, musicians on the show, they are generally more familiar with how to play to camera, how to work the medium. And we are in Los Angeles shooting the second episode of John Mayer Talking Watches. And before every shoot, we have to make sure that the audio levels are correct, right? So I would say to you, Ben, mic check, and you would say?
Mic check.
Yes, in that exact way. Oh.
So this is my point, that there is kind of levels to this. When you ask John Mayer to do a mic check, he does it with this command and almost this melody that kind of stops you in your tracks. I'm looking down at the mixer, and I hear him give his mic check, and I think I looked up and just said, whoa.
Who had the weakest mic check?
Weakest mic check? I can't think of anyone off the top of my head. I mean, there have been guests who've just outright ignored me. You know, the star power of our hosts usually kind of overpowers our guests a little bit, but can't really think of the worst mic check.
Yeah, if you ignore Korhonen, you're not getting a part two. It's game over. Will, who's up next in your bracket?
Next up, we have Reza Ali Rashidian versus Brad Farmery. We have you know, probably the foremost dive watch scholar in the world. I think that's accurate to say, versus a Michelin star chef who you know, has a few restaurants in New York. I believe that Goldberger book on dive watches, that was all of Reza's collection. Is that correct?
The other way. The book, everything in the book was Reza's collection, but that's like a small percentage of Reza's collection.
Right, right, right. So an incredibly impressive collection that he brought to the table. During the episode, we only focused on some of those to, you know, kind of narrow it down. But there was that Deep Sea Special number one, not two, not three, number one. So quite, you know, quite a piece there. That piece loses probably many points for being absolutely impossible to shoot with that, you know, domed crystal. So negative points there. There was that single red patent pending Sea Dweller, which really stood out as a star to me in the collection. Would you agree with that, Ben?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, Reza's the guy. I mean, if you want to know anything about, in particular in this case, you know, Sea Dwellers, he's absolutely the guy. I mean, he's also just like the nicest, warmest human being ever.
Yeah, really, really is.
I also want to give a shout out to myself. My beard looks great in that episode.
It's a true story.
I mean, I'm not kidding.
It does look good.
Look at all the episodes. That's the best beard moment for me.
What he doesn't know is that was all done in post. So, you know. Reza is up against Brad Farmery. You know, in terms of Brad, I think that the chef watch collector connection is a kind of an interesting one, and he's a good example of that. You know, we hear about chefs all the time, and we, you know, later we'll meet Alton Brown, and you know, we hear about Daniel Boulud and folks like that. So there is definitely a chef watch collector connection. He also cooks with a white System 51, which is a very cool piece. For me, the standout watch there was that Bellin Ross, I think it's a BR03, super clean, simple, all black with that sort of square case, you know, kind of a nice tough tool watch, and for me, super easy to shoot, so bonus points there. Next matchup is the magician Dan White versus the Hoyer expert, Jeff Stein. Great matchup to me. Dan White is the magician at the Nomad, which makes the best chicken in the world.
True story.
So that you know, gets points, you know, with me. Jeff Stein, Ben will remember this. The wonderful Mr. Stein dropped 146 watches on his kitchen counter. So if you want to know what gives somebody anxiety in my world, that's it. But Jeff is just, you know, the depth and breadth of his knowledge about a particular brand is impressive and very interesting. He really, really goes deep on Hoyer. For Dan, this was an episode hosted by Jack. So anybody who can do, you know, magic tricks on Jack during the episode and sort of befuddle Mr. Forster gets a lot of points for me. That was a great element of this this episode. You know, for Dan, I think the standout piece to me was, well, there was both an IWC Mark 15, which was a high school graduation gift to himself. And he also had the new Rolex Daytona with the Cerachrome bezel, probably the hottest watch in the last 3 or 4 years.
Yeah, that's fair, I think.
Yeah, you know, for Jeff, ton of Hoyers. Impossible to pick one or two here that really stood out. He just had, you know, every Octavia, every Carrera, and whatnot. So that I think is a great matchup, and really two completely different ways of thinking about watch, you know, passion and interest and collecting.
All right. Last up on your side?
Last up on my side is Spike Ferriston versus Greg Norman.
That's a matchup right there.
One thing that strikes me is how this brings these people together. In what other world would you see these two matched up in anything? You know, Spike, you know, car enthusiast, comedian, Seinfeld writer, best known for episodes like The Soup Nazi. Again, big points for Spike. Plays so well to camera, knows exactly what he's doing. Great stories, great anecdotes.
So the episode with Spike was a fun one because we got to go to the Santa Monica Airport, which is just kind of a really neat place. It's kind of a 1950s style airport that still exists today. You know, a lot of folks, including Spike, including Harrison Ford and Keanu Reeves and Jerry Seinfeld, et cetera, have these hangars there that they rent. You know, when we were filming with Spike, Harrison Ford's hangar, which is just across the way, the door was open. And you could see some, like, kind of Indiana Jones-style airplanes in there, some motorcycles, et cetera. You know, Seinfeld keeps a bunch of his cars there as well. It's just a neat, neat place. And, you know, and Spike, you know, in many ways represents, you know, a lot of things that I love, not only watches and cars, of course, but, you know, I'm a huge Seinfeld fan. And growing up, you know, the idea of the Soup Nazi was just like this like revelatory thing for me when I experienced it the first time around. I think I was in middle school or high school. And like to meet the guy who conceived of that was pretty neat. And then, of course, the fact that like you are in a functioning airport, but this is not really a commercial airport. It's kind of like an FBO. I guess there's some small commercial flights there. But, you know, after we did the filming, Spike was like, hey, get in. And we hopped in his Speedster, which is the car that he's had from really, I think, the longest out of all of his cars. He bought it when he moved to L.A., and we just ripped around the whole facility in this Speedster, which was like such an LA type of thing to do, and certainly, you know, a memory for me. But yeah, I mean, you know, having Spike become kind of part of the family from you know, that episode on has been great. And we're obviously still very good friends. You know, we now actually have the same car, you know, of there are only, you know, there are only nine of which in the world, two in the country. So mine and Spike's, you know, and he's just a great guy and really become kind of an ambassador, not only for us in the watch world, but also kind of like the enthusiast Porsche world, which is a fun little place to be.
And then with Greg Norman, we shot down in Florida at the clubhouse at one of his golf courses that he had designed. Greg Norman is one of those just really impressive human beings who is all, you know, a little bit larger than life. He has really parlayed his sports career as a Hall of Fame golfer into a very successful business career. Assembled a nice collection over the years and had great stories, you know, to go along with them. The Rolex Hulk was a standout there to me, something that he wore often and was especially proud of. It had been a birthday gift from a friend, I believe, in Australia. Bonus points for Greg for allowing us to play a round on his golf course.
Play a full round or play a round?
A full round or a round? I believe we played 9. Is that Greg? You would remember.
No, we played 18. I think we ran out of balls around hole 14 and had to skip on back to the clubhouse.
Okay, great. I would say that, yeah, things fell apart around hole 14. Let's go with that. So I think that's, a very interesting matchup, bringing together two people with different ways of collecting. So, you know, to me, really fascinating. I'm going to really enjoy seeing how people respond to this.
Nicely done, Will.
Thanks, Stephen.
I think we got James, you're up next.
Yeah, let's do it. So I got a really good quadrant. It's a real big mix of people, as you would kind of expect from this. So the first one, and I don't even know if I'm actually saying this sentence correctly, but Goldberger, he gets a bye. Do you get a bye? Is that how that works?
Yeah, you get a bye.
All right. So Goldberger gets a bye, so we can move on. So the first one we're talking about is actually Mario Andretti and Jack Nicklaus.
Oh,
which,
wow,
is, in my opinion, like a really fascinating lineup matchup, because we're talking about two. They're almost like other words kind of fail these two guys. Like, to say they're icons of their world is kind of a discredit to some level. Like, Mario Andretti was largely considered to be the finest car driver in existence for a span of time. Certainly a favorite in Ferrari's endurance years, and then moved on to race just about anything that had wheels. I mean, if there's a driver out there to remember, especially an American one, it would be Mario Andretti. Really impressive guy, and some really, really cool watches. John did a great job with this in a room that looks like a museum to Mario himself. And then, of course, we saw Ben with what is probably one of the most famous kind of setups for TW is Jack Nicklaus and one watch. And I think it's one that I've watched many times, not only because I've written things like Sunday Rewinds for it. And then, of course, there was some auction coverage this past year because this watch was sold for a charity, which is fantastic. And the two really come together as an interesting matchup. And this is one that I would have a lot of trouble calling, because Andretti, you have the appeal of several different watches, obviously, and this great conversation around it. And then with Jack, it's his appeal. Your vote would be more for Jack himself. And I think the two are a really interesting mix up, and both great episodes.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting because, like, they were peaking kind of at the same time. You know, they kind of came up together. And as you said, like, they, you know, Nicklaus is literally considered the greatest golfer of all time, and Andretti is in the conversation, as you said. Like, I agree, like, if you're going to talk about somebody that drives all categories, he's number one. You know, there might be a better F1 driver, there might be a better, you know, whatever,
sure,
driver,
sure.
But if you're going to talk about car driving, he's right up there. I didn't even realize until this moment that, like, we had both of those two guys that kind of peaked together in our little stable of videos here.
Who do we think would be better at the other one sport?
I think they'd probably be both pretty bad at the other sport.
That's probably the right answer.
But my money would be on Nicklaus, maybe when he was a touch younger, but Nicklaus simply because he clearly had demonstrated the ability to move from one sport to another.
Yeah, he was a basketball player.
Right. Yeah. So I think he just has that hand eye, and I don't know if you could train a race car driver to think at a golfer's general level of speed. I'm not sure. There's like race car driving is a special type of insanity. And I'm not sure how well it translates to, like, that's the thing that's special about Andretti is a lot of times a certain type of race car driving is very specific, whether you're a rally driver or like guys that make the leap through several different types of cars is rare. I mean, it happens, but it's rare. And to see you know, a guy like Nicholas get behind a Formula One car would have been pretty special.
I mean, they're both like, there's no, you know, having been there for both of these things, like both these guys are just competitors. Like they just like, they're there to compete, you know? And so I think if you challenge Mario Andretti to get good at golf, like he would figure it out. No question about it. Like, he'd make it work, you know?
Should we do that?
That'd be amazing, actually.
Yes.
Yeah. The funniest thing to me is that like these guys got matched up accidentally. Like this is just this, all these, this bracket was determined purely mathematically. It was purely by the order in which we shot and ran these. So the fact that these guys end up matched up in the first round is pretty serendipitous.
Absolutely.
All right, so let's move on to round two so I don't take up too much time here. My second round is also a pretty rad collection. It's Tony Fadell and John Mayer's second video. So, I mean, a really tough matchup, especially for Tony. John Mayer is a favorite among what I have to think is most of our viewership. But I will say to anyone listening to this before they go in and cast their vote, don't sell Tony short. It's a fantastic video. He's a very thoughtful person. I mean, a true icon in his genre in Silicon Valley. And definitely one of the videos that I remember watching more than once. Because I remember having read his name, I've been a long time kind of tech nerd, and to see his name pop up from one company to another, these big kind of product leading companies, he's such a fascinating guy.
Yeah, I mean, in terms of legacy, I mean, obviously there's Nicholas, greatest golfer, Andretti, mm-hmm. you know, among the great drivers, Mayer, amazing musician and amazing mm-hmm. Instagrammer. But like in terms of people that like have impacted like actual life, Tony is probably, I would think, number one on the list. You know, I mean, iPhone, iPod, Nest, etc. There's a great film about a company that he used to work with called General Magic, which is I would highly recommend. That was basically yeah, like awesome. Precursor to, you know, several things that we now have today. You know, he's the real deal. I mean, he's still a close friend of ours and around the company all the time. Yeah, I think, you know, it's hard to compete with Mayer's collection, especially in number two. But if there's somebody that's going to compete with kind of like general influence and you know, kind of interestingness to our audience, Tony would be the guy.
Yeah, I agree entirely. I think it's a great one. I think both of these are fantastic. Obviously, the Mayer ones kind of speak for themselves in many ways. And with Fadell, I mean, he has such a kind of an eclectic collection. It varies in a few different kind of directions, but I gotta give some strong love for that 5712. I mean, what a fun thing to see, and it definitely, I love that you know, Will, you photographed it, I assume, or were involved with such. You got the scratches, and there's something really fun about seeing a Nautilus with a lot of wear on it. So huge points for that.
I think also he brought his wife Danny's watch, the Jaeger 101, the little diamond bracelet with the smallest yeah. mechanical movement. That was a neat thing as well.
Really cool.
I remember walking out of that episode being like, you know, I don't think I've ever met anyone whose mind works quite like that and expresses himself so succinctly, you know, even when talking about very complex things. Quite an impressive human being we're talking about here.
Yeah, he's one of a kind for sure.
Okay, so for my next one, another kind of difficult one to call depending on your taste in watches, but this is Shuhei Nishiguchi versus Jason Singer. And I think that the two of these are, this is an interesting matchup because you have a really eclectic profile of taste from Nishiguchi. And then you have Singer, who is a prolific collector. So if you're in it just for the highlights, the hits, I mean, he has some really, really awesome watches. I mean, and a level of knowledge and understanding that comes through very quickly in the video itself. I think this is a fun matchup, and I certainly, Singer's one of my favorites in terms of going back and being able to look at some pretty special Patek Philippe references and that sort of thing, and to see the way that, obviously with Talking Watches, these are all people's collections, but I would say not everyone that's on Talking Watches is a collector per se, the same way that I wouldn't necessarily say that I'm a watch collector in that I'm a watch owner in many ways. And with Singer, you're looking at like a pure collector.
Not quite at Jeff Stein level, but too many watches on the table.
Yeah, there is a solid, there's a couple shots of just a whole table full of impressive.
Yeah, I'll add something quickly. I mean, Jason Singer is, you know, at least at one point was and probably still is, you know, the greatest American high-end watch collector. You know, he's a collector. It's not like he's not doing this for fashion or being cool. Like he is, like he needs to collect. He needs to like go through that intellectual exercise of like looking at minutia, finding the different variants, acquiring them, you know, really, really doing it. And, you know, he is, you know, he's really a special kind of figure in the watch world then and now.
You've got a pretty interesting one coming up after this one, don't you, James?
So yeah, this next one is one that does actually have a personal stake in my world because it involves one that I actually hosted and one that I'm quite proud of, actually, and that's Moki Martin, and we have him teamed up against Rani Madhvani. This is a really tough one to call because in my book, like, Moki could take it the entire way. Like, I think we're talking about a champion here on any level, and certainly in a Talking Watches bracket, I think he's worth the vote. I could not be more biased. I love Moki. He's one of the most impressive people I've ever come across, one of the most positive people I've ever come across. He loves watches, and he had a couple of really great watches. And we had a thrill of a day shooting that episode, for sure. If you want to talk about standing in the sun and attempting to deliver a two-camera segment before I sweat through my shirt, doing that on Coronado Island with Moki was something else. Something I'll never forget, for sure.
Yeah. Side note, you know, could you have worn a smaller shirt for that?
It was an appropriately sized shirt, Will.
What size? Okay. What size was it?
A bit of a gun show, I'll say. But okay.
Hey, you down there on Seal Island, might as well make sure that everybody knows that you're...
what you're packing.
Yeah, for sure. And then with Mr. Madhvani's collection, I mean, a really specific aesthetic in that it was one that was adjacent to a lot of the classics. And I really like to see that in that sort of like collector's eye in applying to some of these, what you would call more esoteric or kind of weirder options that are all still coming from all these brands that we know and love. And he really has, he presents his perspective on watches, especially when they get into some of the discussion about watch cases, I think really well. And I think it's an oddball collection among the greater kind of Talking Watches sphere. But one that's definitely worth a viewing, and may very well be worth your vote if you like just some of the kind of like weirder or more that it has a very defined kind of perspective that again is kind of outside a lot of the stuff that we see more commonly on TW.
Yeah, if you want to see a bunch of those like funky cased watches, follow him on Instagram. It's just like a never-ending stream of these just like really unusual watches. Like stuff, it's not the stuff you're going to see on everybody else's Instagram.
And then last up, as far as matchups go for my quadrant of this this whole game is Ahmed Rahman versus Rene Bayer. And this is a super tough one. These are two killer collections, great personalities, really cool watches on both. I mean, if we're talking personally, the fact that Rene Bayer has an Everest watch is kind of a tough thing to look past. That's such a killer one. It's also, I think it's my favorite TW hosted by Steven. I really love this one. You guys had some like fun chemistry going on, and he seems so happy to be there, which is an obvious plus. And the watches are crazy.
So, you know, when Steven did the Rene Bayer episode, that was one, and I am, you know, kind of, if I can say, the most giving, you know, kind of executive possible. Like, I want my guys to get the limelight completely, but that one I was genuinely jealous of because the Bayer Museum and the Bayer collection is something that I've heard about for years, and I've been to the store, or, you know, the flagship store in Zurich. I've never actually been in the museum, and so to be able to get an inside look at what the Bayer collection is actually about is just amazing. And, you know, and to be clear, like that collection doesn't necessarily belong to Rene Bayer himself. It belongs to his family's museum, which he is obviously the, you know, the majority shareholder in. Really wild stuff. I mean, you know, as wild as you can basically possibly get. And it just shows how important these early, you know, kind of flagship retailers were and still are to this industry. I mean, you know, the Rolex from, I believe, Hans Wilsdorf, you know, these connections to Patek Philippe, as far as I know, they're the only retail oversized Tiffany, of course, to have Bayer on the dial of any 5170. And that was even a special edition watch. You know, really just wonderful collection of kind of old school watch industry folks.
And then certainly with Ahmed Rahman's, certainly no less crazy when it comes to watches, some really cool stuff. I mean, that Cartier, I think, is the standout for me. What a neat watch with a fascinating movement and a really cool history. And I think this one is one from my bracket or from my quadrant. I think this matchup is one that I'm really interested to see how people decide to place their vote, because I don't actually know where I could either. Two really cool collections, two great personalities.
Yeah, totally agree. I think both of those episodes both fall under the like must watch category. Like if we were to create a list of the, you know, top 10 to 15 episodes, I think both of those would make their way onto it. Cool. Thanks, James. You've got the folks on your bracket who have buys are who again?
That's John Goldberger and Praz.
And Alfredo Paramico, right?
Oh, right. And Alfredo Paramico.
Cara, you're up next.
Oh, man. I was hoping I would go last.
Nah, we're going to go around. We'll go in a circle here.
Is that how these sports brackets work? Okay.
That's how sports work, yeah.
Well, I'm glad you clarified how these were picked, that they were at random, because I really was confused as to how some of these people got matched up. But so for me, in my quad, the buys are JCB, Kevin Rose, and JJ Redick. All of which are very like iconic early episodes. So I think that is well deserved. But kicking things off is Don McLean and Morgan King. Two vastly different episodes. one is the famous singer of American Pie and a couple other songs. And Morgan King is a celebrity in his collecting habits, I'd say, but he also loves celebrities. So I feel like personality wise, this is kind of matches up really well, but they have really different collections. Like Don McLean is kind of varied and he buys kind of not on impulse, but I would say he buys emotionally, where Morgan King is emotional about his watches, but he goes really deep and he's really thorough about different references. And he's really into Paul Newman's and Daytona's. Whereas Don McLean's more into like kind of classic watches. So very different lineups, but we'll see who comes on top. I don't know if Stephen Gray and Will were all there for the Don McLean shoot. That was my very first Talking Watches. I was very nervous.
Behind the scenes tidbit there, coming into his house, I almost ran him over, backing the rental van into his driveway. He was directing me from behind, you know, at the bottom of the driveway. And, you know, this famed singer of American Pie was like sort of hopping back and forth from side to side, waving me in. I kept losing him in the mirror, so I thought he was done for.
And Will, don't forget that the soundtrack to your near vehicular manslaughter of Don McLean was American Pie.
The music died. Yes.
Yeah. Bye bye.
We must have listened to that song, 20 times on the drive out?
It was on a loop. We tried some of the other songs, but they weren't as good. So we stuck with American Pie. That was the soundtrack. But yeah, no, that was pretty scary. both almost running over him, but also meeting him, because he's like this big singer, and you kind of like grew up listening to that song, and all of a sudden you're like, I'm in Don McLean's house. This is very strange. It was fun. So it'll be interesting to see. And, you know, Morgan himself is like such a character, and he's really very fun and very nice, and he's very approachable. And so his collection's pretty killer also. So I think
never a dull moment with Mr. King.
Not at all.
He is a one man party.
Yeah, I love
him. And he's always around, which is nice. He's always kind of, you know, whenever we're in LA, he wants to hang out. And so it's nice to kind of keep that friendship going, I think.
Yeah, Morgan's also low-key lent us many, many, many watches that have showed up in other places. So, yeah, shout out to Morgan. You've seen his watches in his Talking Watches episode, but you've also seen them in the Hodinkee magazine. You've seen them in other features we've run on the site, in reference points. You know, when you need a sort of high-end, hard-to-find watch, Morgan's a great place to go because he usually has it, and he is always so happy to share and like participate in this community, which I think is a big plus for Morgan. All right, who's up next for you, CB?
So we've got Howie Kendrick and David Robinson.
That's a funny, it's funny that that worked out, those two guys together.
First round Sporto matchup.
I think that you guys rigged this, but it's maybe not. It's
still
like
have my David Robinson, Robinson pen.
There you go. James hosted that episode. And yeah, I think it's very interesting. I mean, two athletes, clearly, and both with very different collecting styles. I mean, Howie is loved watches as a kid and kind of started collecting them later on in his career. And it's a lot of vintage. It's a lot of like very pure tool watches. So it's like dive watches, military watches, you name it. Like he's really into that stuff. And he is also a very nice person and very approachable. And was, I remember meeting him in the office that day and he was genuinely really excited to be there and talk. You could tell he really, really loved watches. And he's also kind of worked with us on H10 and stuff like that. So that's one collection. Then you've got Dave Robinson, who's also very into watches, but has a really unusual collection. It's kind of quirky in the sense that like he's got a Piaget here, and then he has like a random minute repeater from Ulysse Nardin. That's his favorite manufacturer. And so the collections couldn't be more different, but the ethos is still there, which I think is, which will make it kind of difficult to choose between these two.
Yeah, that's a good point. I think to me, like Howie, his episode really captured the sort of ethos of collecting really well, and was really really presented really well by him. I really enjoyed that one. And David Robinson, for those of us of a certain age, is just a legend of the sporting world. So that was really an honor to be able.
Yeah,
to,
he was awesome too. And if you want to talk a hot day. It was a hot day in San Antonio.
It was a hot one.
We shot the interior segments at Robinson's school, which was lovely. But as Gray just likes to see me sweat, I had to do the stand-ups outside. And it was so hot where I put my sunglasses on. It was so sunny and hot. I actually put them on, and then I went to reach for more sunglasses. I already had them on, and I was like,
welcome,
so bright.
Welcome to Texas, baby.
This can't be a thing.
I like to watch that Canadian bacon sizzle.
Yeah. It just doesn't get that sunny up here. It was hot. It was a really fun shoot. He was great. I thought the watches were, a lot of them were like determined by things he bought at various stages of his athletic career. And then, which I think is beautiful. And then he had a lot of great stuff. And it's David Robinson, amazing attitude, really nice guy. He was happy to be there, and it was a good shoot.
And then we ate a lot of barbecue.
Oh, so much. Kings County or something like that.
Kings Road.
Yeah. So jealous. Gray, how does Howie's World Series win for your Washington Nationals weight this category?
District of Champions, baby, DC. Ushering in a new era.
All right, I shouldn't have invited this, but all right, my mistake. Kara, who's up next for you?
I have Jonathan Ward and Bethany Frankel, two very, very, very different videos and collectors.
Yeah.
So this will really be just come down to, like, I think, just like personal preference. I mean, Jonathan Ward is the founder of Iconic 4x4. He's into cars, like all these SUVs. He and his wife kind of like, I think, remodel them. James, you can probably talk a little bit more about that than I can. But his watches are all very design focused, and they're very, is esoteric the word? They're very unusual. Like, they're just not your run of the mill watches.
So the episode with John Ward is kind of a throwback episode. It's one that you know, we did early on in the day back in LA. John Ward is the founder of this company called Icon 4x4s. And what he does is basically do resto mods, kind of in the Singer vein, but it existed before Singer, of really souping up 4x4s. So Land Rovers, FJs, etc. I think he actually prefers working on the FJ to anything else. And we're talking like, you know, mid six figure, just crazy specced out Land Rovers and FJs. That are often in the collections of some very notable folks. And he's just one of those guys that really beats to the sound of his own drum. And he just, you know, if you look at his watch collection, it is different than anything else we've ever featured on Talking Watches. He just does what he wants to do. The same can be said about his business for sure. And he's one of those guys where kind of everybody knows him in a certain set. You know, if you're in LA, if you're into cars, if you're into watches, you know Jonathan Ward.
Bethany, on the other hand, she is also about the details, but in a very different way. And she's really about finding what she likes and researching and trying to, you know, get the best deal for the best watch out there. And she's really kind of enjoys the hunt, if you will. And she has a little bit more of a classic aesthetic.
Cara, what did it mean for you to be able to host the first episode with a female collector?
Oh, it was sick. I loved it. She is someone that I've watched on TV for a very long time, since the beginning of Real Housewives of New York. And she was always one of my favorite people on the show. So it was really surreal to meet her in person. She's actually very funny, very warm, very smart, very quick-witted. And it was great. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, I would add to that. I was sort of skeptical of, you know, a reality TV, you know, personality and whatnot. Boy, was I wrong. Like, she is a whip smart person, and she was just like, you know, destroy you in a battle of wits. Really interesting, interesting person.
And she's actually doing a lot right now with Be Strong for coronavirus. So we should probably link that up in the notes, Stevie, if we can, because her charity, Be Strong, is actually very active in global crises. But yeah, so I mean, for me, you know, I have a soft spot for that episode, obviously. Then we have David Williams versus Phil Toledano, which I actually think is a really interesting matchup that this happened this way. we know Phil, he's a friend of the brand and company, and spent some time with him outside of talking watches, and he's a very eccentric character, and he's very funny and, you know, very English, and he's an artist, but he's also a car collector, and he collects very specific watches that are kind of weird. He's like really into Beta 21 right now, which I think is very funny, versus David Williams, who is an astronaut and pilot and has done a lot of, like, I don't know, he's been out to outer space. Like, he's actually like kind of like lived these adventures in real life, and he collects watches based on his use for them. And so it's just a very different collecting style. One is more purpose-driven, and the other is more, he buys what he's into in that moment.
So Phil Toledano, or Mr. Enthusiast, as he now goes, you know, is really, he's just one of the oddest people I've ever met. And I say this as somebody that talks to him almost every day. You know, if you've ever met Phil, you know that, like, he is the most active communicator on earth. Like, he will just text you and everybody else all day long. You know, Phil is an amazing guy, and it's funny to see that video now, because he's really become, you know, he's become part of the watch community, at least in Instagram, or on Instagram, in that he's posting all the time, he's giving feedback, he's giving tips on his own buying and selling, and it's neat because, you know, that was kind of his introduction to the watch world.
Yeah. The David Williams episode was shot at the Canadian
Warplane Heritage Museum.
There it is, where we actually ran into James's old boss.
Yep.
Hmm. Well, she was a big fan of James Stacy, so
she's very sweet. I'll keep her name. I'll keep her name.
Have to question her judgment.
Canadians, we stick together. There's only so many of us.
Who's closing out your bracket, CB?
Okay, Praz 2 and Roger Smith.
Okay, that's a pair right there.
Yeah.
Yeah. When I saw that, I was like, okay. I was like, all right, different, very different. So Praz, in his second episode, showed up with like 20 watches. I wasn't there that day. John Buse hosted it. But I did see the watches after the fact. And it's a heavy flex, that collection.
Serious stuff.
It's very serious. I mean, he had all the Grand Exhibition Patek World Timers. He had the AP Royal Oak and Black Ceramic. He had that Nautilus with like a bird on it, you know.
A bird and a billion diamonds.
Yeah, a bird and a billion diamonds. Nautilus with a bird on it. My favorite line from that episode is he said that Pateks and APs were like the new Cartier Love bracelets.
I don't even know what that means.
Yeah, I can't say that he's wrong. I don't understand.
It's
a little bit of a reach, but sure. So then you have that. And then you have Roger Smith, who is like very, you know, very serious watchmaker, very well known, very admired, a big deal in the independent circle. And he's, you know, he's very thoughtful in his collection. He doesn't have, you know, he has a very select number and he wears them, and his daily wear is a Rolex. And like, he's just very methodical, as you, as one would expect with a watchmaker, right? So it's just totally different. Two different people, two different collections. Both are very famous in their like respective fields. So it's kind of interesting to see them, you know, together, but
two very, very different people. In the same way that we did the switcheroo with Andretti and Nicholas, who do you think would perform better in each other's occupations? If we switched Praz and Roger Smith.
I think Roger Smith would be a better singer than Praz, a watchmaker.
Praz on the Isle of Man, making watches.
Yeah. I'm going with Cara on this one.
I actually would like to see Roger Smith in the Fugees. I think that would be great.
I will, though, on a serious note, you know, say that I did travel to the Isle of Man to do a shoot with Roger a couple years ago when we were doing the Road Through Britain series. And just such a special guy who has such a special place in the watchmaking world. So, you know, big fan of Roger.
All right, CB. That wraps up.
That's my roundup. I don't know how you guys are going to vote. It's tough choices out there.
All right, let's. I'll go through my quadrant, and then we'll wrap this up. Do some final predictions here, and then let people dig into the bracket themselves. So for my quadrant, there are two buys. It's Mr. Eric Singer from the band Kiss, and then Alan Mala, who was the founder and publisher of Man of the World, the sort of men's lifestyle magazine. They both have collections that are super specific to their personalities and their kind of backstories, but we can save that for the next round. So the first true matchup that we have in on my side of the bracket is Mark Hadawi against Alton Brown. You know, Mark is a designer and sort of architectural restorer and historian, and then Alton Brown is a TV personality, famous chef. And it's funny because these two guys, again, like a lot of the folks here, have collections that are sort of microcosms of their personalities. I think you could look at these collections of watches and kind of get a sense of who these guys are. You know, Alton's collection it's mostly tool watches. It ties to his love of aviation. He's a pilot. Ties back to this Omega that was his father's. Everything's very purpose driven. I specifically love the first watch in the story is a 6542 GMT with its original Bakelite bezel. And every time I see a picture of this watch, and not just this reference, but like his specific example, it just blows my mind. To me, it's one of the most beautiful vintage Rolex watches I've ever seen, and I see quite a few in this line of work. But then we have Mark Hadawi, who is kind of a collector of lots of things. He collects antiquities. He collects 20th century design. To some extent, I guess he collects architecture. We shot it in his John Lautner house up in the Hollywood Hills. And he's sort of been paring his watch collection back. And he's really boiled it down to a handful of pieces. So he had six watches, all of them vintage Rolex, and any one of them could be the star or centerpiece of any other collection. Really incredible stuff. A big logo 6200, just a really perfect gold 1675. Just like really, really amazing stuff. And it kind of filming it in that house, just it all kind of felt of the same ilk. It felt of a place.
So, I mean, Alton Brown is another one that, you know, we had heard and had seen. He was into watches for the longest time. And he became, again, quickly part of the Hodinkee family after talking watches. He then came back and appeared at our Hodinkee 10 anniversary weekend in New York. I mean, the star of that episode has to be his father's Omega. You know, the fact that his father passed away, you know, kind of early on in his life, and then it was stolen from Alton's dorm or apartment when he was in college, and then he found it years later on eBay and confirmed that it was actually his father's watch. I mean, it's just kind of mind-blowing. And, you know, I think that is one of my favorite stories, period, from any talking watches.
That was a really, I think, a really special episode for us as a company. He's just such a great storyteller. So my next matchup is another one of these funny pairings that could only happen this way, which is it's William Messina and Fred Savage, who, like, my first thought when I saw this was like, these two guys could not be more different. But I actually think they're kind of like two sides of the same coin in a funny way. I think like William is a scholar and like a true like nerd about these things, but also loves watches. Like, it really comes from a place of passion, and for him it is fun. On the other side, like Fred Savage, when you meet him, you think he's this like fun-loving, goofy dude who just like gets really excited about watches and likes them. But then you start talking to him and you realize he really knows his shit, and he's done a ton of research, and he really goes deep on this stuff. So I think these guys have these two shared impulses, and one just shows more of one and the other shows more of the other.
So, I mean, you really, if you know Fred Savage and if you know, you know, William Messina, you really on the surface couldn't think of two more different human beings. I mean, William is the guy to correct somebody on anything at any point and say, well, actually, you know, it's X, Y, and Z. And Fred Savage on the other side, you know, he just wants to learn and he just wants to be told what's cool and what's not and what's interesting and what's not. But when you think about them both and when you really get to know them both, they're actually really similar. They're both really kind of hyper emotional, you know, really sentimental guys that really care about watchmaking in a pure sense. You know, it's not about the ownership, it's not about the, you know, the accumulation of wealth or things that represent wealth. It's more about the sentimentality of it all. And so in many cases these guys are a lot more similar than you might think.
I'll keep things moving here. The next one in my quadrant is Todd Levin and Matt Jacobson, which I think is another just like perfect pairing, mostly because I think these two guys would like love each other. Like, I think these two guys could be best friends. They're both super obsessive dudes, and I mean that in the best way possible. They're guys who are all about the details, all about scholarship. They collect across categories. I mean, in both cases, they're art collectors, design collectors, record collectors, watch collectors. Matt's a car collector as well. And they're guys who have like very tight curations on their collections. Like, they're not guys like, you know, maybe Jason Singer is an amazing collector. His collection is massive. It's equally about quantity and quality. There's a comprehensiveness to that kind of collecting. Matt and Todd are about kind of like figuring out how you can have like the smallest number of the most interesting things, which I find weirdly appealing. Or I guess if you know me, probably not that weird. I find it very appealing. But yeah, these two guys as a matchup, it's kind of like it's a head-to-head competition of tightly curated, very scholarly collections, but that also have an emotional component, which I think is nice. It softens things a little bit.
I really enjoyed, I think Todd's was the most recent episode, and I really enjoyed how he described his approach to collecting and sort of, you know, ascribing value, you know, monetary value versus meaning, you know, to the collection. I thought he did that really well. So it was a different, you know, kind of approach to this.
I mean, I wonder from your perspective, using that as kind of a jumping off point, right? Like, we've done 53 of these. You've been at every single one of them. Somehow something new comes out of each one, and not just a description of a watch, but like some sort of new approach, new ethos, new idea comes out of each one. Does that continue to surprise you?
You know, every time, because it's a combination of the person and their background and what your understanding of them brings to the table versus how they choose to sort of convey and tell their stories and their collection and how their collection. So every single one brings something out, and there's always a takeaway. Absolutely.
Yeah. Cool. All right. So then the next one is one of our most recent episodes with Josh Bernstein, which was hosted by John Buse. And then an older one with Raul de Molina, who I think this one's really fascinating because these are both guys who are on TV in very different ways. And Raul de Molina is, to me, fascinating because he's a massive, massive celebrity in the Spanish-speaking world. And if you don't speak Spanish, you might not know who he was. So he has this weird sort of like, he has gravitas, but also kind of like an unassumingness about him that I find really charming. This is an episode that, like, when I saw it, I didn't know who he was. I had no idea what I was kind of getting myself into. And I've watched it a couple times, and every time I find him charming. Like, it makes total sense to me why he's a huge deal.
El Gordo.
El Gordo, man. I don't know. These collections are, again, very different. Like, Raul's collection is a little bit bigger and a little more varied, whereas Josh's is very, like, tool watch purpose-driven, with the exception of this really beautiful Cartier tank. Yeah, I think it's. I mean, at this point, we've run through so many brackets, there's not a whole lot to say, other than, like, it's one of the things that I think is interesting about this process is that it puts very different approaches to the same hobby next to one another, and sort of, like, forces you to think about where you kind of fall in it, and where your own preferences are. All right, we got what, two more on my side. The penultimate matchup in the bracket is one of my favorite ones. It's Gary Steingart, the author and amazing personality, opposite Andre Iguodala, the professional basketball player and one-time MVP of the NBA Finals. This is another case of, Will, who do you think would do better in the other's career, Andre or Gary?
Sorry, side note, I apologize. I just left the scene. My wife just screamed because someone came to our door. Which is, I guess, life in, isolation.
Yep.
but it was okay. Don't worry. Okay. It was okay. Rewind that, Stephen. Gary and Andre in...
Who would do better in the other's career, Andre or Gary?
Undoubtedly Andre. Gary in the NBA, trying to guard LeBron James, coming down on the fast break, pulling up from 16. No chance. No chance. I'm sorry, Gary. Love you. I'm sure that Andre could write a pretty killer book, and I think he has, actually, on business and finance and investment or something along those lines. So
there's at least a good New Yorker story about Gary spending a week in the NBA.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
yeah, I mean, when we shot the one with Andre Iguodala, I mean, you don't hear his name every day anymore, but at that time, he was one of the biggest names in basketball.
Yeah, he was. At that point, they had just finished, I think, the 2015 NBA Finals. Golden State had defeated Cleveland, and he was the NBA Finals MVP. He was in town, I think, for Fashion Week or some such thing. And he was, you know, he was the guy at that moment. You know, he was the guy. So it was really an honor to have him on the show. And that was, shout out to Brad Farmery, that was shot at Public, one of Brad's restaurants.
Oh, yeah.
Here in New York.
Very nice. And then, yeah, Gary, this was one of my favorite episodes, continues to be one of my favorite episodes. Not just because Gary has become a friend since getting involved in the watch world, but seeing he and Jack interact like that is just amazing. It's watching two extremely complicated minds that both are worrying about 9 million things all at the same time, just like go toe-to-toe with one another is so fascinating. They could be talking about watches, they could be talking about anything, and I would watch.
If you want to think of a fun what if of those guys in the basketball world, just imagine the two of them as the coach for each against the other team, just throwing chairs at each other. And I like both of them have like a coach energy, maybe more than a player energy at this point.
Yeah.
But I just love the idea of like either one of them getting it right in the face of the ref, you know, really questioning a call, really, really dumping a clipboard with a missed free throw, like.
That might be the cover art for this post is Gary Steingart going full chair toss.
Just grabbing chairs, grabbing nachos out of the front row, like get them all on there.
Amazing. All right, with that, I'm going to move to our last pairing here. I think everyone's losing it a little bit. We're going to go. The last pair is John Edelman up against Keegan Allen. John, at the time we shot this, was the CEO of Design Within Reach. He's a legend in the design and business world. And then Keegan Allen is an actor, a photographer, a musician, podcaster, an all-around super
lovely
fun
guy.
Dude. Yeah, he's great. There's a small list. I think I don't think we're giving people too much of a peek behind the curtain here. There's a small list of LA-based folks who anytime anyone from the Hodinkee crew is in LA, they get the phone call and end up having dinners and drinks and talking about watches and driving around LA, having a good time. And Keegan is toward the top of that list. He's really become a great kind of like friend of the show and all around supporter. But yeah, this video was shot during a really interesting period in Hodinkee history when I guess what, like 12 of us, 14 of us went out to LA for 10 days to shoot a whole bunch of videos, host some events, you know, do a whole bunch of stuff. I think we did a couple stories at retailers out there, just a ton of things. That's when we taped all of our pilots for the pod. And we shot this in the very weird house that we rented in Beverly Hills for that week. So
we've never been the same since then, I'll tell
no.
you.
No, everything changed.
We've changed. We've changed as a people.
Yeah, it's good. It was a good shoot day.
All shoot days are good days, Stephen. All shoot days are good
that's
days.
That's true. That's a good attitude, Will, especially for talking watches. All shoot days are good days.
That's right.
All right, so we've gone through the bracket. Everyone is probably so sick of hearing about picks by now. But the real takeaway here is that it's up to you guys. Like everyone listening here, you should go vote. We're going to be rolling this out over the next, you know, couple of weeks, 3-4 weeks. Check the site daily. You'll have opportunities to vote on the matchups. We're going to do kind of weekly updates here on the podcast. They won't all be full hour plus episodes. But yeah, I think this is an interesting opportunity for you guys and for us at Hodinkee to look back on a couple years of talking to some of the best collectors and most interesting collectors in the world and think about what it means to be a watch collector in 2020. You know, what makes an interesting collector? What makes an interesting collection? What speaks to you? Don't just vote, leave comments. You know, we're going to go through the comments and talk about them here on the show and in future posts on the site. This isn't just a thumbs up, thumbs down. It's also about why. Awesome, guys. Thanks for bearing with us through this. And like I said, if you're listening and you want to vote and you want to get engaged here, we would love it. And all the links will be down in the show notes. So check them out there. Grail, make sure you're all taken care of.
Woo! Thanks, guys. I love sports.
May the best one win.
And get out there and vote, people. Rock the vote.
May the best one win. This week's episode was recorded remotely by our group of editors and was produced and edited by Grayson Korhonen. Please remember to subscribe and rate the show. It really does make a difference for us. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you next week.